In today's episode, you will hear from Mike. He's a professional trainer and professional bodybuilder, but more importantly, he's a man dedicated to inspiring others to pursue a healthy body, mind, and spirit. Mike shares about a time in his life when it seemed like he was on top of the world, but he was actually dealing with a drug addiction that utterly consumed him. Let's hear about the street he lived on.
Welcome to the Streets of Our Lives, where we explore the journeys of our past, present, and future. Not the literal streets, but the paths we walked to find healing, acceptance, and inner freedom. Join us as we walk together on this journey of hope and inspiration.
When I asked Mike to describe a time in his life when he was struggling with addiction, he told me it was a dark, lonely time, despite the fact that he was surrounded by people working as a DJ in big cities like New York and New Jersey.
Yeah, I would say dark. Dark would be one. Even though, like, externally, a lot of people would think that nothing is happening. You know, I'm pretty good at putting a face on, a filter. But internally, it was very dark, especially for what I was going through. You know, I was dealing with Molly. So I was in the DJ realm. So being in that type of realm, it is very dark. You know, being able to control a whole bunch of people in a crowd and through movement and music, you know, there's power and music and vibration. So having that power and ability can be a form of idolatry also. So you can soak that in. And, you know, when I was introduced to it through my friend I was DJing with, you know, it was a first hand on experience of like, oh my goodness, like there's a happiness and a life that, like, this is powerful. Like I want to experience and feel this all the time. And in that realm, you begin to get things for free. So when it's just being handed to you, and, you know, I was DJing Tuesday to Sunday. So we got pretty successful pretty quick in like a span of 3 months. And we started becoming resident DJs for a lot of places in New York and New Jersey. It was great. It was a great time, but very dark. And, you know, I internalized it all, and, you know, I started microdosing it throughout my day. And, you know, it just became a little bit ridiculous of like, all right, I'm going to go to the grocery store. Like, you know, let me just take a little bit so I can get excited and want to be in the moment. You know, you're always seeking that high, that experience at the peak. And, you know, after your first time, you never really experienced that. So I was chasing things of this world when I was never going to get it. And yeah, it became very dark, very tragic. Felt alone.
In case you didn't catch what Mike said, he became addicted to a very well-known drug in the party scene known as Molly. If you're unfamiliar with it, Molly is the street name of the drug MDMA, methylene deoxymethamphetamine. If you've heard of the drug ecstasy, it's essentially the same thing as Molly. Ecstasy and Molly are just different street names for MDMA, but the difference is that ecstasy comes in the form of a pill and Molly is a powder. The drug is known to act as a stimulant in that it boosts energy. It also changes how people feel emotionally, giving them a powerful but temporary high by flooding the brain with serotonin. It also alters perception by enhancing sensory experiences like music, lights, and colors. It's very dangerous in that it can cause serious long-term health problems to both the brain and the body. And as Mike said, it's also extremely addictive. So addictive that he would use it just to do simple tasks like going grocery shopping. I wanted to know more about what life was like living with this addiction and how long it lasted. He told me that he was using from the age of 23 to the age of 29.
I first got into DJing when I was like 16. Yeah, then I didn't, you know, I was doing just like little parties here and there. And then when it really exploded was about when I was about 23 years old. And I DJed up until, I want to say like 28, 29. But it was, you know, 5-6 days a week, nonstop. And it was from that time I started I started taking Molly, and then, you know, I would take it every now and then, but then it just got more and more. And then once I found a contact, and once I found out the stuff that he had was just, I guess, pure, it was another level of experience that, you know, I was like, wow, I think I can figure out a way to microdose this and, you know, sustain it, even though this is pretty dangerous. And it even got to the point where, you know, my wife now, she was my girlfriend at the time. When I would do it in a manner to where I almost wanted to be caught, to where it was almost like me pleading, like, I need help, but I don't know how to ask. And I remember there was one time that I took it. I was in Atlantic City, and my friend gave me just a dosage of it, and it was in pill form. He told me, he's like, hey, listen, like, this, for some reason, this dose is pretty strong, just to let you know. I'm like, you know, I got a high tolerance, I'm fine. And I remember I ended up taking one, and it was too strong to where I couldn't even function. Like, my nervous system was all out of whack, to where I couldn't speak, I could barely move. In order to text a friend that was next to me, it took me almost a half an hour to say, I'm not okay. Where I didn't sleep for 72 hours.
Can you imagine taking 30 minutes to send a 3-word text or not be able to speak or move your body? Hearing Mike talk about that experience made me think of a nightmare. You know, when you're sleeping and you have one of those really bad dreams where you're trying to cry for help or you're trying to run away, but it feels like your feet are glued to the ground? Yeah, it sucks. But this wasn't a nightmare. I can only imagine how terrifying that experience must have been for him.
I remember I finally mustered up the courage to FaceTime my wife. You know, instead of calling her, I needed her to see me. And to this day, I screenshot that picture as a reminder of, I will never go back to that. And I remember the disappointment in her face was like soul crushing to me. And even after telling her, like, okay, I think, like, this is the last straw, I'm not going to do it, I still ended up doing it anyway. Because, you know, addiction is pretty strong, and, you know, it takes a lot more courage just to speak it. You have to put into action. So I was at one of my best friends I've known since pre-K. I'm still friends with him today. He was getting married, and I ended up taking it there. And I could see in her face, she's like, I know you took it. And trying to plead with her, like, listen, I need your help. Like, I need help with this. So she was the most important person to me. So I'm asking the most important person to me to help me. And she said, like, no, I'm not going to help you. Like, you can do it on your own. Like, no, that's it. And that for me was like hitting rock bottom. I just poured out to you. I finally came to you and asked for some help, and you turned me down. So I held some resentment towards her. So there was a little rift in our relationship, even though, you know, it was on the rocks, but it was still good. Like, I wasn't going to leave her, and things weren't going to go astray to where, you know, we were going to break up.
Coming from someone who has loved various addicts in my family, there's a part of me that understands why his wife reacted the way she did. I'm guessing she was feeling fed up and tired with the roller coaster they were on. Maybe she thought that Mike was making empty promises and didn't want to be let down again. Speaking from experience, I know what it's like to be on that roller coaster, hoping and thinking your loved one is going to change and stop using these substances, only to be disappointed when they start using again. With that said, there's also a part of me that understands why Mike felt resentment when he reached out for help and he was denied. But thankfully, Mike and his wife, Alyssa, are a dedicated couple who are still together today. Not only did their partnership grow stronger, but Mike successfully quit using drugs. Let's find out how he was able to change his life around.
So I had reached out to a best friend of mine at the time. I told him, I said, I need you to come over. I said, I just need you to come over now. Right away, he came over, and I had literally like a whole bag worth. It was a lot of money, like a couple $1,000s. I said, I need you to watch me toss this in the toilet and flush it. I need to get rid of it, and I need you to watch me just, I need you to watch me go through my phone and delete all the numbers of these contacts, even on social media. I need you to watch me delete every single one of them. So he watched me do it, and it was painful to watch kind of that money go down the drain, but I knew that was the first step that I needed to make. And then it was from that point, you know, I grew up in the Catholic Church. I went to Catholic school. So I remember from that point, I said, all right, like, Jesus, I don't really know you. And I hear a lot about you. I've heard about you in school, but I don't really know who you are. I just know the name. And I'm giving you this chance. I'm calling out for your help. I need to be saved. So this is it. I need your help. And from the moment that I did, my life completely changed. It was from that moment I found him. He saved me. He gave me a new heart, a new spirit. He clothed me in righteousness. He gave me forgiveness for all the things that I've done. And it was just like feeling brand new. So the happiness that I always tried to find, I found it because it was in him. And the peace that was instilled in me was like a peace that I've never felt before. And it was internal. And I'll never forget the day that happened. And I will always, no matter what, I will always praise his name, even if I might seem like one of those crazy Christian Jesus freaks. Yeah. And I'll say that I am a freak for someone that has died for me. Absolutely. And my life, I wouldn't say has gotten better, because just because I'm a Christian doesn't mean my life is all beautiful. But no matter what happens in my life, even if things go wrong, the peace that's within me will never change, because it's his peace that brings me through tribulation and persecution and strife and anguish, and that I'm able to find joy in all those things because I know that I'm doing it for him. And that's what gives me hope. And it's through my joy and my belief in him that continues to grow my faith.
Addiction. It consumes people. It takes hold of their whole lives, and it dictates nearly every aspect of one's life. It's hard for people to stop their addictions, and even if they do, it's common for them to relapse. Why? Well, I think it's because they don't find something else to focus on. If the substance is no longer around, there's an absence, an emptiness, a void left behind where the addiction once lived. What I think is so powerful is that Mike not only physically got rid of the drugs and the connection to those drugs, but he also sought out spiritual healing. He discarded the drugs and filled the void left behind with God. Whether you are a Christian or not, I believe Mike's story can offer insight, inspiration, and encouragement to you, whatever your journey looks like right now. I asked Mike to share what changes occurred after he got rid of the drugs and found Jesus.
When I called out to him, I was about like 29, 30 when it happened. I'm also grateful for my cousin Arnold, because my cousin Arnold is a man of faith, a very strong man of faith. And the journey that he's been through is incredible. And for some reason, he and I are the closest in the family. He and I just got along. He also almost took a role of like a father figure for me. Even when I was 16, when I was still doing some stupid stuff and messing around, he's the one that really, you know, gave me the business and told me I need to get my, you know, I need to get my act straight and do something with my life. So he took me under his wing. And it was, you know, when I was about 29, 30, he's the one that brought me to church. And he brought me to a Christian church called the Chapel. And when I heard the pastor speak about Jesus in a way that I never experienced, even not in a Catholic church, it was completely different. Just from hearing the worship music and hearing the words, there was power to it. And, you know, to find myself crying during this music, I'm like, you know, what is this? What is happening to me? I needed to know more. And I started to pray, even though I didn't really know how to pray. I just kept it as a conversation. And through there, I started to pick up my Bible. I started to read on a daily basis to learn more about him, who he is, and to learn about the harshness of what he went through on that cross. How could I not give my life to somebody that did that for me, and an appreciation and a manner of telling everybody about the goodness of who he is? And a lot of people are confused about him when he just wants a pure, honest relationship with you. And the 3 years, so from 30 until 33, I was going to church. I was heavy into my Bible, into learning scripture, reading scripture. And at 33, I got baptized. And from that point, that's when things started to really kick into a different gear. And, you know, it's a daily thing. It's not just, okay, Lord, I believe in you, and boom, all of a sudden things just start happening for you. It's a constant reiteration over and over and over, because I have to die to my flesh every single day and pick up my own cross, what he tells us to do. And I have to constantly point my focus and direction on him. So there's a lot of things that in my life I had to get rid of, certain idols in the house, music I listened to, people I used to hang out with. And, you know, although it can seem hard to do, but it's a cleansing that needed to happen if I'm going to step in a direction 100% and completely give my life to him.
If you've been listening to the podcast for some time, you will know that I too am a Christian. I can attest to what Mike says about his faith in Christ. Just because we're Christians doesn't mean our life is all sunshine and butterflies. But our faith gives us hope and strengthens us to keep going even when we sometimes feel like giving up. Like I said before, regardless of what your spiritual life looks like, I'm certain you will feel motivated listening to Mike's story, especially if you or someone you know has struggled with addiction. You know, addiction takes a hold of people. If you're addicted to something, more often than not, you engage in other activities that enable the addiction. I asked Mike what other habits or lifestyle factors he left behind in order to get to the healthy place that he is now.
So, when I found the Lord, he instilled in me a new heart. So, things that I used to love, for some reason, I didn't like it anymore. It felt different. So a lot of the music, you know, DJing was, oh my goodness, it was one of the greatest experiences. That I have such a passion and a love for music that it was so much fun. But I knew I had to get rid of it if I was going to move on and get away from that lifestyle, because it was killing me. Literally, it was killing me. I wouldn't be around right now. I'd probably be dead somewhere or overdosed if I didn't go down this road and call upon his name. So having to pack up all my DJ equipment and toss that to the side. Certain friends that I was hanging out with that would, you know, they would always go to the bars. They would always go out to drink. And every time that I would ask them, like, hey, like, can we just do something else? How about you guys join me for a hike? How about you guys join me for a workout? And they're like, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm like, okay, so you can't meet me in the middle. So, all right, I understand. So a lot of people I ended up having to love from a distance. Even though there's no love lost, I still love them. I still pray for them. There's just no more relation in that sense of hanging out with them how I used to. Certain music that would make me feel a specific way, I also had to cancel that and get away from that, because it was almost bringing temptation into my body. So that I had to get rid of. And, you know, so between the DJing, friends, music, also stopping alcohol, also stopped, you know, from 22 on, you know, smoking marijuana. I also had to get away from that. You know, I try to convince myself, like, okay, even when I found myself as a Christian, you know, I still found myself doing it. And even though when I would smoke, I would feel terrible about it after I would do it. I'm like, but again, this is another form of an addiction that I find myself going down that road, even though people find it like, oh, it's not habit forming. But if you have an addictive personality, you can find yourself continuing down that road. So having to, again, go through that cleansing phase of having to get rid of it, not smoking, and going through that phase of, you know, that I need it. But once you pass it, oh my goodness. Because the one thing that I asked for, I said, Lord, when I smoke, I don't dream. I want my dreams back. From the moment I stopped, he gave me my dreams. So that's another thing that he gifted me with, is gifting me my dreams back. And it's amazing that, you know, the creator of this universe answers me so personally. You know, there's some people that you reach out to that won't even text you back or call you back. But, you know, our creator answered me. You know, man knows the vessel, God knows the heart. And for him to answer me so personally in so many aspects, even things that I pray in secret, and the fact that he answers me, there's no question, no doubt about it that he is real.
As Mike shared before, while DJing was fun at the time, he recognized that the darkness that came with it was destroying him. Once he decided to stop using drugs, he recognized that he had to stop engaging in other activities that had the potential to drag him back into the pit of darkness he desperately needed to leave behind. Just like other guests that we've heard from in past episodes, I'm so grateful to Mike for his vulnerability in sharing what he experienced. Now that we know what sorts of things he let go of, let's hear about what positive changes he focused on in the path to recovery and healing.
For one, of course, it's a mindset. You have to change your outlook on how you think. So instead of the negative things that I used to tell myself and be down on myself, I started to change that around and started to tell myself, you know, that I love myself. I am a warrior. I am positive. I am a go-getter. I am successful. I will pour all this into myself, but not through me, through God. What I love about the Lord is he sees me not for who I am, but who I am to become for him. So these are also affirmations that I have to remind myself that on how he looks at me and how he loves me, not how I think about myself or how the world sees me, but from his perspective, from this unconditional love that knows no boundaries. So, you know, the one thing between motivation and discipline is motivation goes out the window. You know, it's like taking a bath. You got to do it daily. But discipline for me on what, that's the one thing that I took away from bodybuilding, is the discipline that it takes, because you have to be 100% zeroed in at all times. It's not just going to the gym. You have to be prepared for everything. So that's the one major takeaway that is still instilled in me from my competition days. You know, you have to wake up early in the morning, you know, discipline, even the things that you don't want to do, you still do it anyway, because you have to. You have to get it done. And I remember my coach would always just say, like, I don't care how you do it, just get it done. Like, okay, I'll figure it out. I'll get it done. And that's the type of discipline that I allowed to instill in me to this day, from the bodybuilding days to my focus on God and every other avenue and aspect in my life, even as a husband, to be the man that I need to be for her on a daily basis, and to take care of her, to provide for her, even the person that I have to be for my friends, for my family, to always show up no matter what. And that's the big takeaway.
Speaking of always showing up, Mike consistently shows up on a daily basis for himself and his personal training clients. He loves the work he does, and he's a positive influence on the lives of those he works with.
As a health coach, as a personal trainer, I do take care of a decent amount of people. So I always have to show up for them and be 100%. No matter what I'm going through, I have to leave how I feel, what I've been going through, or anything that I'm experiencing, I have to leave that at the door. Because I have to show up for them. And it's, you know, it's also a therapy session for them. So no matter what they dump on me, I have to be that positive aspect. And I have to I have to be that light for them, even if they can't find it themselves. So I'm someone who, it's funny, my wife was making fun of me yesterday for this. I almost time everything because I'm so specific when it comes to time. So when I wake up in the morning, I have these little time durations to get everything done. So I have these blocks of time to where when I get up in the morning, I have to make sure that I have time to prepare all my food for the day because I cook everything in the morning. I have to make sure I read scripture. I have to make sure that I pray, and I have to make sure that I have ample time to get to my session and to have a little bit of downtime. That way I'm not rushing. So everything is like hard stop, hard stop, hard stop, hard stop, on the go. And you know, my day is pretty long. It starts at 5 a.m. and it ends normally around like 6 o'clock now. So it's constantly on the go. So being that consistent in everything that I do and showing up for all my clients, that's an important factor for me. And when I show up for them, they end up showing up for me. And that's an appreciation value that I love. It's, you know, I always question, like, this is something that I've always done majority of my life since I was 18. I'm now 39. So I've been doing this for quite a while. And I've always questioned the Lord, like, is there anything else? Is there something else, any other avenue that you want to put me in? And every time I ask that question, I end up having a client reach out to me and say something so heartfelt of like, you know, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here where I am right now. And I just want to thank you for just believing in me and for helping me get through the things that I've gone through, not just physically, but mentally. And it's just like, ah, fine, fine. I'll stay here. I'll do this for you. So, and you know, I love it. I love what I do. You really have to love this job, this type of profession. You know, you deal with a lot of people, but that's the other thing. I'm in a position to where I get to work with people that I want to work with, and I have a great day. All the different conversations that I have with people, it's amazing. And most of the people that I work with are older, average age, I would say like late 40s, 50s, 60s, upwards to 77. And I used to work at a physical therapy facility called Excel. And I worked there for almost a decade. And again, you work with the majority of the older crowd. And the amount that I learned from them was so substantial that it helped me grow. Having that experience with what they teach me that they might not even know, I take that to heart. And I love everything about it. Like, so this is where I am supposed to be. And wherever else he's leading me, whatever avenue he wants to lead me, It's his will, not mine. I'll do whatever it is for him and not for myself. So praise the Lord. This is all for him.
It just brightens my heart to hear the enthusiasm Mike has for what he does. And I thank God that Mike is no longer a slave to addiction anymore. I asked Mike to describe his current life in a couple of words. This is what he said.
Joy. Peace, content, humility, passion, excitement, glory. There's so much. And all of that is attested to God. I pray Jesus for all of that. Every single part of that is because of him, that he put that in me. And I'll never forget what he's done for me. He changed me. He made me new. He clothed me in righteousness. And now I get to live for him. Now I get to do things for him. Not because it gives me the ability to boast, but it gives me the opportunity to raise him up, lower myself and raise him up, which is what I'm all about. And to be a servant, try to be the best servant that I can be. Not to glorify myself, but to put myself in his shoes and how he came down here. You know, he's on his throne. The fact that he came down here to serve us, to wash our feet, to do the things that he did, to heal. And that's what I want to do for others.
Mike chased his own desires. He chased the high from the drugs and the high he got as a popular DJ, and it brought him darkness and loneliness. It almost killed him. Now, he isn't chasing his own desires. He seeks to do God's will and be a servant, and it's bringing him peace, joy, contentment, and excitement. If you resonated with Mike's story in any way, or you would like to connect with him, I will share his contact information in the episode show notes. While I found myself feeling so spiritually edified and encouraged by my conversation with Mike, a key takeaway I would like to share is this. In order to find healing and happiness, we have to first practice humility. Mike was desperate to change his life, but he knew he couldn't do it alone. He recognized the dark, lonely path he was on and called out for help. He called out to his loved ones for physical help in getting rid of the drugs, and he called out to the Lord for spiritual salvation. It isn't easy to ask for support, especially if you already experience feelings of loneliness, helplessness, or shame. But if you know that the road you are on is only leading you to a dead end, then you have to put your fears aside, practice humility, and ask for help. And if you don't think anyone around you is able to or willing to help you, I believe there is a higher power that loves you and wants to save you. This is Lena LaRue. I'll see you on the streets.
Thank you for joining us on Streets of Our Lives. As you navigate your journey, remember that every step brings healing. When obstacles come your way, don't give up. Keep moving forward. Please note, the information shared on this podcast is for inspirational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice. We encourage you seek professional guidance for any specific concerns.